From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. We move our entire weekly schedule around for one man. He blows in here like a hurricane, Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star. Sam McDowell's appearance brought to you by our friends at Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier. Also those Corona Hard Seltzers as well. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. Super effort.
I came straight from Kauffman over here.
Yeah? What'd you think?
Saw you there last night.
You did?
That was cool. Have you guys already talked about that?
We did.
Okay.
Yeah, we discussed
that was cool.
It.
Cool deal.
Yes. Thank you very much. It was very cool for us, no doubt about it. So, yes. And you were kind enough. You took a video.
I did take a video.
Of the scoreboard.
But I forgot that Curtis was there, so certainly he took a video of it as well.
I saw off the TV. I didn't know it was going to be on the when it was going to be on the video. I knew in the third inning they did it on the television.
Yeah, so that's the thing I found out. I didn't know that they do one for in stadium and then they do another one for on the television. That was news to me.
Yeah.
They came back the second time. I'm like, whoa, no, they've already been here. He goes, no, this is for TV. I was like, oh, okay, my bad. I thought
I wanted the same thing. I wanted to get a shot of where you were sitting from up there, but you can't get to the point where you can. I'd have to lean out where the seats are.
We don't want you leaning out.
No, that's you don't
mean. They stick those radio guys in the second row, though. I mean, they let us important print people sit in the first row. I could see them.
I couldn't see anything, but back of Sam's head looking over.
Yeah, yeah. You know, because the print industry is just thriving. I mean, it's...
Well,
I would
news.
Put you up front, too. So, you know, that's what you got to do. But I digress. Enough about our squabbles. Sam, what did you think of the game today? The Royals are all fixed, right?
I actually thought it was one of their better played games of the season.
It was fairly crisp, I would agree.
There were a few instances of the little things that sort of add up in a game that I think we've seen a lot of the little things go the wrong way for the Royals and reasons why, you know, a bad team finds a lot of different ways to lose games over the course of a week. And I thought when you go back to it, there were some little things that added up for the Royals today to actually win a game. The first one was in the first inning with Kyle Isbell actually backing up that play. I don't think a ton of outfielders necessarily go over there and think this guy might need help on this play. And he gets the ball into the infield. Guy from third doesn't score. Or guy, you know, stops at third, doesn't score. Game ends up being a one-run game in the end.
Yeah, and it was the kind of play that without it would be how bad teams lose. A hit by pitch that advances all the way around and comes in after a guy's not backing up a play. That's how bad teams lose. Like,
yeah.
And that's how the Royals – yeah, I remember we talked about it with Danny. We called it back in 14 and 15 – you know, greasy wins. Because we had for so long have been watching the Royals make all the mistakes. You play a game, you're like, you know, for early on and when they were winning, there's like, you're like, well, they didn't really deserve that game. The other team did this, this, and this. And that's how they only won by one run. It's like, then you realize, no, this is why good teams win, right? They don't make those mistakes.
They don't win 8-3 every night.
Yeah, they don't win 8-3 every night. And they take advantage of 27 outs, right? They make you get 27 outs. They don't run into stupid, you know, base running errors, which we saw. Jeez, Emile Brown, run to your out.
Toot Bland, nightly.
Yeah, it's thrown out on the
bases like a ninny.
Like a ninny, yeah. It you know, they and then defensively, they didn't give 35 outs a game. Right, where it's like, oh God, he didn't make that play, he didn't make that play, you know, and we were looking at it, and it had been so long since you covered the team game in game out that made the right moves, the right plays, that it, like we called them greasy wins, and it's like, well, you get a lot of those because there are a lot of bad teams playing bad baseball. Royals didn't do that today.
It actually is indicative of what I've kind of missed about covering this year's Royals baseball team is that. The record is so bad that it hasn't really given you a purpose to get into the weeds of a single game like you're able to today. And that's what's been the frustrating part about this team. Those moments should be more interesting on a daily basis than what they turn out to be because they're 20 games under 500.
Baseball is an individual sport. You know, everybody's individual thing happening at the same time. And those individual things are fun to break down when the game matters. But when the game doesn't matter, it becomes a collective fire this guy.
Yeah.
You know, there's not like, well, you know, if he makes a better pitch. Yeah, I had a friend who lives in St. Louis and listens to us here. And he says, yeah, I don't listen. I listen to you guys on the app all the time. He goes, I can't stand St. Louis sports radio. I said, well, why? What do they do? What's the problem? He said, they sit and argue about what pitch a guy threw in the sixth inning. That's the topic every day, is he should have thrown this pitch, and why didn't he throw that pitch? And I was like, well, that's kind of what happens when you have good baseball.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of would enjoy that a little bit. I mean, I grew up with baseball as the game that I played, and I mean, it was definitely my first love, and I enjoy the end of the week. I feel like there's more strategy in baseball than there is in other sports.
That's not true, but, you know.
I think there's more in-game strategy and I mean.
Than football? Have you lost your mind?
I do think there's more in-game, like, where are you going with this, and what moves should be made here? I mean, football is certainly game planning throughout a week. I mean, first of all, you put at least six days into one football game. But within the game, I just think there's a lot of different ways you can go. You know, it's sort of the I'm trying to think of, what was that book called? That style of book where you could, I'm looking at you because I feel like.
Choose your own adventure.
Yeah. I feel like you have a lot more options.
Wrong guy, absolutely.
Not a strong reader, was Curtis.
That's, I don't think that's what it was, but.
No,
I'm making a joke. Oh, I know.
But I think that you've got more options on that, a manager does, a player does on that than any other sport. On football, you typically know this is the play I'm going to call. These are the guys who are going to be in on this play. I just think there's more strategy to that game.
I consider you an intelligent individual, and this is probably the most preposterous thing I've ever heard come out of your mouth.
What part of football is considerably more strategic?
First of all, there are constant substitutions. That in and of itself, the specialization of individuals, the constant changing of personnel. Here's our nine guys. Go have fun. See you later. That's it. There's no strategy. Okay, in the fifth inning, I'm going to put this guy in who hits the other way. The double switch, baffling. How could you ever get your arms around, we want the pitcher to, and now we don't even have that.
I'm just going to announce that I have a rebuttal to this, but go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Why
do you think the Royals are hitting considerably better over these past 6 weeks than they did the first 6 weeks of the season?
Strategy?
It's a lot. It's a lot of the.
What is the strategy that's changed?
Well, I mean,
the ball hard.
Alex Zumwalt's whole philosophy is based on what the other team's trying to do to you.
Was Bradshaw guy who said don't hit the ball hard, and now Zumwalt has come in and said to hit the ball hard?
Bradshaw is more of the old school like. Swing mechanic type,
right?
And Zumwalt is more this new age philosophy, organizational. He just sort of represents this organizational philosophy that if you've gotten to the major leagues, you probably have a pretty good swing. Something. There's a reason why you're here. But here's what the other team's trying to do to you.
Yeah, I'm not saying baseball's without strategy.
Here's where you should look for this pitch. Here's where you hit a pitch, what this guy's trying to do to you. I know that there's tons of analytics in football.
You don't see that going on in a football game?
I'm not saying football's non-strategic. I just think baseball is number one on that list. Look, anybody that's involved in football that's deep into the weeds in football is always going to say football's number one on that list. Anybody that's deep into the weeds that covers baseball, they're going to know that sport better, and they're going to say baseball's number one on that list. I just think, you know, I've covered both of those, and I think when you talk to people about the game and the strategy within the game, baseball goes on some deeper levels, I think, than football does.
Can you help me out on this, Curtis? Do you have a thought on this?
I can't.
Do you have it? Like, is one of us sound insane?
That's the most that Curtis has ever had to disagree
with.
You're
a pacifist.
Depends on what you would call strategy. Like, for every single pitch that's thrown in a baseball game, there is a strategic element to it. And there are more pitches thrown in a game than there are plays in an NFL game. So there are more opportunities for strategy. Whether the
absolutely
amount of individual pitch-to-pitch strategy is more important than play-to-play strategy in football, I think those are two separate arguments. I don't think you can say, well, there's 250 pitches in a game or whatever, and there are 140 plays in a football game. That necessarily means that baseball has more strategy. It has more strategic moments, but the importance of the individual strategic calls varies from sport to sport and varies from moment to moment in each sport. So I don't think it's as easy as that.
But what is your answer?
I would think there is a little bit more strategy. I think it's closer than you think it is, but I do think there probably is more strategy because I think there's more strategy play-to-play on both sides. Most of the strategy in a baseball game in the individual pitch is by the team pitching the ball.
You have guys wearing information literally under the bill of their caps that is telling you, where do I line up when this guy? I mean, there's so much going on in baseball that's not seen.
But that's true in football as
it
well.
It is true in football, but I'm just saying that's not that doesn't separate football is what I'm saying.
Hook!
I think it's football, but I think it's closer than you think it is.
Everybody takes their three steps towards the line. I just...
I don't think it's quite that simple in Major League Baseball.
I think you're really oversimplifying baseball I think
football has much more strategy than slow pitch softball at Miller's Woods. But I think there probably is a little more attention paid to each pitch in the major leagues than there were for nuclear waste out at Blue River.
Okay.
I think football is more, but I think it's closer than some might think. I see the point he's making.
Okay. So anyway, what does that have to do?
I have no idea where we were before this.
You're talking about enjoying that there was, actually getting inside the game that we could do that because it wasn't just a collective.
Yeah.
Oh my God, here we go again.
I'd much rather be dissecting. The
games
sixth,
have to matter
seventh,
first.
The sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth
Agreed.
Innings, and that's where we are with this team. Is we're not dissecting sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth innings of a baseball game because the Royals are in a place right now where anything you dissect does not feel like the solution to being 20 games under 500.
What is the solution?
Well, I just said I don't think that there is a solution to being 20 games under 500, and I think that speaks to the larger problem.
Which is?
They don't have the guys. I don't think that this year that they don't have. I still look. I think I said this on your show a month ago that I look at the roster and wonder why I thought the team was going to win 75 games before the season started.
Well, I think it's because you had. I think the biggest thing. I think they fixed the pitching part of the equation, right?
You think they fixed the pitching part of the
equation? Or the hitting part of the Zumwalt? I'm sorry, the Zumwalt. I was looking up at something about the NBA. Deontay Murray was traded to the Hawks, by the way, and James Harden.
I didn't see that coming in.
Opted out. What I had mentioned it. So, but Harden opted. He opted out of his deal, right,
mm-hmm.
with the Sixers.
Correct.
So he's now a free agent. So have fun with whoever wants to sign that ball hog. Russell Westbrook
with
back
Lakers.
Together.
Him and Kyrie. It'll be just everyone's going to play for the Lakers.
How good is James
40
Harden?
Games.
He's not that good. Not. He's not good enough to be opting out of $47 million.
2018, James Harden.
Yeah. So anyway, but that was a sidebar. No, the hitting, I think they got going back the way we thought it would be going. But I think the mistake that was made was buying into the fact that all these pitchers were going to be frontline guys. And I actually am more optimistic when I see Coar come in and throw out of the bullpen, because what we've always said, I said, listen, out of these five guys, everybody, 18 class, I got five starters. They don't have five starters. If they do, I'll be happy to say I was wrong. But overwhelmingly, the math is if you've got five really good prospects collectively over four drafts, and you get one top, one front half of the rotation starter, one back half of the rotation starter, and one reliever, you've done well.
Oh, that'd be a great draft.
Yeah. And
crushed it.
So I think a lot of people got, tied up in the, well, all these guys are going to be good. It's time. Yeah, we had this little blip last year, but no, now it's time for them all to be good. And that's not how it works. And, I think that's the mistake that was made, was counting on the pitching. And I'll again say, I don't care if it's not Cal Eldred. Fine. Fire whoever it is then. Like, that's the part. Like, they're going to go through this year. I'm convinced that they're not going to make any changes. But if there isn't significant progress at a lot of levels with the pitching and nobody's jobs are changed, then I think as an owner, if I were the owner, I'd be like, well, if you can't identify the problem, then you're the problem.
I will say on that, you know, there was a lot made of Dayton Moore's comments. Was it a week ago Monday out at the Jewish Community Center?
About Asa Lacy, yes, we argued about that last week.
But, I mean, there was a lot made about his comments on Cal Eldred as well when Todd had asked him,
how's he doing?
How's his attitude? It was what he had asked about Cal Eldred.
And he said, how's he doing it, didn't he?
He said, how's his doing? How's his attitude? He asked okay. both of those questions. I did not think that Dayton Moore provided the glowing endorsement of Cal Eldred that a lot interpreted, because he ended that by saying, we'll reevaluate things. And if I'm in that position, I mean, let's take our three positions here. If your boss said, hey, we'll reevaluate this show at the end of the year, like, would you feel like that was a significant boost of confidence? I wouldn't.
No. No, I mean, I wouldn't be crushed by it. You know, I think if you think you're doing a pretty good job, then reevaluate, go for it, you know. But
if your team is last in the league and a lot
you
of
you would not take
pitchers,
it as a positive.
You would, yeah.
Your point's a good one. Yeah.
So I did not take that as some ringing endorsement of Cal Eldred. And you're probably with me on this page, but I would be surprised if Cal Eldred is the pitching coach next year. The question is, does he survive the year? And I think the crux of that question is, what's plan B if it's not Cal Eldred? You know, I think they feel like when they put Alex Zumwalt in the hitting role that even if he's not their long-term plan as that coach, because I still think he's got more value, and I think the Royals believe it too, in his previous role. I mean, it's the reason that you saw a lot of their prospects turn around their careers, their minor league careers before they even got here. When you talk about Prado and Melendez, and I mean, he was with Michael Massey, I mean, he's with Eaton, I mean, he's with a lot of those guys. So I think he's more valuable there, but at least when he's here in the major leagues, he's still instituting the type of things you want your next coach. Like, it's not going to be some hard right turn whoever assumes that role next year. I don't know exactly who within the organization would assume that role that Cal has that wouldn't represent sort of you got to change a lot by the end of whoever is the long-term solution next year.
It would be easy from a 30,000 foot view to think, well, what's the point of, you know, this team's 20 games under, they're not going anywhere. What good does firing a guy now do? Now, they may not get better with someone else. You don't bring someone else in to get to improve necessarily this year, but you have to ask how much of the development of these guys is going to be done at this level for the next 3 months. How much of it will be done under the supervision of the pitching coach, and do you think he is the guy to do that? And if you think he isn't, then I think it makes sense to at least get somebody in there who you don't think is going to damage the development of these guys. I don't think it's as simple to say, well, they're 20 games under, might as well keep them the rest of the year.
So I agree with all of that. But I will say that the structure of this, you know, and this is true of most organizations.
Let me get just one final point of mine. I don't think you're going to find next year's pitching coach is not going to be the guy that takes the reins the rest of the way. So
right.
Whoever you bring in, if you're going to make a change, you're probably going to move on from that guy.
But isn't there value in sending a message that if you're not getting it done, it will not be tolerated, and to send a wake-up call? Like, by all accounts, he has good relationships with these pitchers. That to me is a reason for them to see that, oh, I didn't perform and it cost my friend his job. I mean, there is a reason to fire somebody to set mm-hmm. the tone that we have a level that is expected, and if it's not achieved, changes will be made. It starts with him, but it doesn't end with him. And it will be you at some point.
Yeah, I do think, generally speaking, yes. In this clubhouse, you know, Carlos Hernandez has been sent to the minors. Jackson Kohar has been sent to the minors. Brady Singer started in the minors. Chris Bubich has been sent to the minors. So I feel like if you're in the rotation, don't already have that message, and you're just not paying attention to what's going on.
Singer was actually sent to the minors. He started with the big club.
Yeah. Didn't open in the rotation is
right,
what I meant
right.
with him. But to get back to what Curtis said.
Just to save you the tweets.
to get back to what you said, Curtis, because I do think that is the crux of what the Royals need to be asking themselves going forward is what's the best voice for just
right.
development. Cal Eldred's voice is not the only one in that room. You know, if somebody has, you know, their research department does a lot of stuff that gets mm-hmm. brought to Cal Eldred's, that gets brought directly to players. Their minor league, they've got people in the minor leagues that watch every pitch of all levels. That stuff always gets relayed to the players as well and to the pitchers as well. It's not, and that's what I was trying to say with the Terry Bradshaw comparison, that it did represent sort of a shift in the way they operated with their hitters. If they got rid of Kyle Eldred, I don't think it would represent that same sort of shift. I do think that, you know, when if you make that move, and I think we all think it could potentially be a when you make that move, you'd like to bring somebody in that isn't just giving you just isn't in line with your philosophy, but also could go a potential further step.
Yeah.
And tell you something that's not currently part of your programming.
And it seems like they were much more prepared when the season began to make a change at hitting coach than they were at pitching coach. Like they had the guy, they knew when they made that move who it was going to be and what direction they were going. They don't really seem to know who that would be on the pitching side, which may be why they're not making the move.
Which is where I wanted to get to, which is unless you know the guy that's the pitching savant that at one point worked for the Braves, then you have no idea. Because even Alex Zumwalt is a connection to Dayton Moore's Brave years. And I think that it's great that worked out. But and I do think, listen, I brought Curtis here because I knew what Curtis could do. We worked together at another radio station. I came here. I knew what he could do. We do it all the time. You know the inner workings of people. But I do think that there is also a time where it's like, hey, we need some fresh ideas. You know, we need another voice. And it's like I said, you know, Zumwalt, I think was he drafted by Dayton Moore? I was trying to remember. Was originally committed to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, before being drafted in 99 by the Atlanta Braves in the fourth round at a, you know, such high school. 10 minor league seasons, an outfielder. You know, I mean, there's a connection there. And, like, to me, I'd be looking to the Astros.
It's a better way of saying what I was trying to say, which is I don't think you just want somebody who is going to be in line with your organizational programming, but something that's going to give you something different that you just hadn't thought to think about. You know, you had not had the thought that this is something that we need to think about, whether it's overall, you know, whether it's something that applies to every pitcher or whether, I mean, you see pitchers turn from five starters to three starters turn to two starters, stuff like that, just by one pitch sometimes. And those are the examples that I just think are absent from this year's pitching staff, from this entire group, really.
We will take a break. More with Sam McDowell, brought to you by Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier. You can get your Coronas. One of the places you can get them is over at Twin Peaks, twinpeaksrestaurant.com. Great setup with the TVs, made from scratch menu. Ice cold 29 degree man-sized draft beer. You get it at Twin Peaks. Independence, Olathe. You can see more details at twinpeaksrestaurant.com.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. I made the joke earlier about an end of the hour question. Who's the Rangers all-time home run leader? I thought, I'll use something like that. With at least 2,000 at-bats, who was the Rangers' career leader in batting average?
At least 2,000 at-bats?
At least 2,000 ABs.
Julio Franco or Rafael Palmeiro would come to mind.
Michael Young?
Michael Young is 10th at 301. Julio Franco, 3rd at 307. Who else did you say?
Palmeiro. I don't know if he got enough to get to 2,000 with the Rangers.
Has played in the postseason in Kansas City as a visiting team, a visiting player.
But not for the Rangers. Because they've never played the Rangers in the postseason. Yeah.
Like in the 14-15 run or earlier than that, I assume?
Earlier than that. One-time batting champion. Seven-time All-Star.
One-time batting champion, seven-time All-Star. But how many of the All-Stars were with the Rangers?
A lot of them had to be 2,000 at-bats. 2,000 at-bats with the Rangers?
Two of them with the Rangers.
Two also. Five other All-Stars with another team, but he had two.
If I start ticking off the teams, you'll pick it up. You'll pick it up.
Okay, go.
Two with the Rangers, three with the Pirates, two with the Expos. Played here for the Toronto Blue Jays in the 1985 ALCS and was almost an ALCS hero. This is big bases clearing double. Won them game four, put him up 3-1.
He's looking at your screen.
He doesn't have it. 319. He doesn't have it up, but I'm out of guessing.
Expos.
Mm-hmm. Started with the Pirates, was on the 71 World Series team.
Okay.
Went to the Rangers, then went to the Expos, where he was an All-Star, then was wrapping up his career with Toronto in the mid-80s. Wore the number zero on his back, usually. Most of his career.
I'm drawing a blank.
Al Oliver.
Oh, okay.
Hit 319.
Al Oliver, good lord.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
The top 10 go Al Oliver, Will Clark at 308, Julio
Franco. Oh, God, do you remember when Will Clark, that was a giant when he left the Giants for the Rangers? And then who was the other first baseman that was out there? He got, was it McGuire? Or there was two first basemen he signed, and he didn't ever come close to what the other guy did.
Clark, Julio Franco, Rusty Greer, Alex Rodriguez, Adrian Beltre, Yvonne Rodriguez, Mickey Rivers, Josh Hamilton, and Mike Young. But AO could hit.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, what are we playing for? joeskc.com. You can order it right now. Pick it up on your way home. Three locations, 47th and Mission, 119th and Stringline, and 117th and Row. And, of course, the Kansas City Barbecue Store. Everything you need to grill like a pro, to barbecue like a pro, it's there at the Kansas City Barbecue Store, including the fuel, the meat, the grills, yes, the smokers. They got it all. It's where I got my Traeger. It's where I've got my last two grills, actually last three because my mom's grill. We got there as well. It's the Kansas City Barbecue Store, 119th and Strangline. We're talking to Sam McDowell, brought to you by our friends at Corona. What was I going to? There's something else about the Royals I wanted to ask you. What do we leave off with? Curtis distracted me with the end of the hour question. What do we leave off with?
We were talking about the pitching coach at one point.
Yeah, and then, where to go, and if there is what the hell?
And if Eldred should be the one to move forward, then you mentioned.
Right, and we talked about the Braves connection with Zumwalt.
This has to be great listening right now.
Yeah, I apologize. Well, this wasn't it, but I'll just move on.
Maybe you'll get around to it when you, oh, yeah, it was this.
Yeah, maybe it'll come to me.
We'll talk on
at
the phone.
6:02.
We'll talk on the phone at midnight tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, here's that thing. It was awesome. What a topic. But, no, the from the pitching standpoint, how many of the guys do you think that are in this organization? Because I keep pointing out, you know, and I will continue to point out that they still could win 72 games, which is what they won in 2012. 13, they'd win 87. 14, they'd win 85 and make the playoffs. Is that right?
In 14, they won 89.
Okay. 89 and be the wild card. And then win a championship. So in 12, they only won 72 games, yet they were 3 years away. When 12 ended, 3 years away from being world champions. 3 years and a month, if you want to be picky. So can you – how many guys that are, you know, starting games this year do you think are starters or relievers 3 years from now if this team is winning?
Yeah, it's like the phrasing that Dayton Moore always uses, that this guy's part of a championship staff. I think that's what you're asking. You know, I think Lynch and Singer can be part of a playoff team for sure.
Are they starting?
Yeah, I think both those guys can start. I do think, you know, if it comes to I think Brady Singer could be a dominant reliever. You know, I had said that in the first couple weeks of the season. Like, if he's going to be in the bullpen, freaking use him down
there.
Well,
Keith Law said that a month before the draft, before he was drafted in 2018. So if it takes 5 years for them to get to what a guy wrote a month before the college draft,
I think you're
pitching, a reason to look inside what we're doing here.
Your pitching staff's pretty good, I think, if Brady Singer is going to be not one of your five best starters. Like, that is a playoff team if he's not one of your five best starters. I still think Lynch has the makeup to be in a rotation for a team that makes the playoffs. You know, obviously not Greinke. I've long thought that Heasley can be like a five, but is that a five on a playoff team or like a 500 team? I don't know that I see Heasley as like a starting pitcher on a playoff team. I really like the person. I do like the fact that he throws strikes compared to the rest of the rotation.
Mm-hmm. So, at times.
Well,
not early when he came up.
Exactly.
He'd gone from like a 6-1 strikeout to walk ratio at AAA to like less than one to one.
Yeah,
for a while.
And even more alarming than the ratio was just the walks number themselves, which obviously leads to that ratio. But I wasn't as concerned about his lack of strikeouts because you felt like that was going to dip. I don't know that the other guys in the rotation I would put in there. Obviously, there's Bubich, and which one am I missing that's currently part?
Keller, Lynch.
Keller's the other one, yeah. Keller's the one that hasn't popped to me yet. I think if you include Keller, you're saying that they make the playoffs next year, right? I don't think this is a playoff team next year. So, I mean, he's in his fifth year. I mean, his team control is expires after next year. So, I don't think I include him for that reason, not because of the pitcher, but for that reason.
When I ponder that question, I kind of, and maybe it's not the spirit in which it's asked, I kind of reverse engineer it. Like, if you're going to say they're in the World Series at the particular date, how many of these guys are going to be there? I might put guys on that list that I don't necessarily think will be there, because if they aren't that good, they probably aren't going to be a playoff team 3 years from now. So I might not think that Brady Singer or Daniel Lynch is going to be on a major cog in a playoff rotation. But if you say they're going to be in the World Series in 3 years,
okay, so
they probably are somehow.
So we're using 2012 as the jumping off point, because as I mentioned, just for a refresher.
Well, let's go with your answer first, because there's six guys that are kind of currently part of this rotation since Lynch is on the IL, and his thing is pretty minor. Like, he's going to be back sooner rather than later. So you've kind of got six guys that are comprised in the rotation. I mean, I don't think.
Kevin Greinke is one of them, or?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I don't think you'd put Carlos Hernandez as a yes answer to this question. So the
I'd put him as an option. You could, if somebody wanted to be like, no, they're going to fix him, and he looked great last year. And
yeah,
you know, Roy Halladay got busted all the way back to like A ball at one mm-hmm. point in his career, and then made it up and was great. But to my point, the point I was making about the 2012, here are the top 12 players on the 2012 team. Baseball Reference has their WAR, and they grade it by that. Alex Gordon, in order. Alex Gordon, Alcides Escobar, Mike Moustakas, Billy Butler, Salvador Perez, Kelvin Herrera, first reliever, Jeremy Guthrie, Luis Mendoza, Greg Holland, Felipe Paulino, Lorenzo Cain, Gerard Dyson. All right, so the pitchers are Herrera, Guthrie, Mendoza, Holland, and Paulino. The two guys that aren't there in 14 were both pitchers. Right, so I don't know that you have to have this answer. Like, to Curtis's point about the World Series, well, I guess I'm going to say that if they're in the World Series, this guy's come together. Doesn't have to be the case. And I think that is, I don't think you can try to re-engineer exactly what you did your last championship, right? I think that's a fool's errand. I don't think you can ask any fantasy owner.
And there's evidence that they've done way too much of that.
Yeah, well, but I think if there's something that they're not doing, it's that they're trying to build it through pitching.
That's what I was going to say. That they need to have more examples of pitching this time around, because that's what
they've
drafted.
That's where they've done it.
Yeah,
yes, and I think that's the mistake. That team, rotation in 12, Bruce Chen was not on. Was he on the 14 team?
Mm-mm. I don't think so. I think 13 was his last year.
I'm gonna double check that real quick.
He was there in 13, but not 14.
Bruce Chen was with the Royals in 14.
He
two
was?
And four with a, not very good.
Oh, wow.
2-4 with a 7.45 ERA.
I don't think he wasn't on the playoff roster.
I don't think so. Mm-mm. And he may not have finished the year, and then he had one more year in Cleveland the next year. But so, Bruce Chen, here's this team 2 years away from being 90 feet away from tying Game 7 of the World Series, and they're running out Bruce Chen, Luke Hochhaver, could be Brady Singer, Jeremy Guthrie, so they had gotten a hold of Jeremy Guthrie, Will Smith was starting, who is still relieving, didn't end up, he was gone. Didn't they trade him? I'll look at when he exited KC. Will Smith was
Angels?
He left the Royals in 13 after 13.
Turned out to be a pretty valuable pitcher.
Oh, yeah. And he went to the Brewers in 14. So I don't know if there was a deal or if he just left in free agency. I don't remember how. You might look at the transaction.
The Royals traded him to Milwaukee for Nori Aoki.
Okay. So he ended up being a piece. And Jonathan Sanchez were the six guys that they list as starters. So the only one that would start 2 years later was Jeremy Guthrie. You know, so I think if there's a lesson to be learned, other guys that started, Everett Tiefert had five starts that year, Vin Mazzaro had six, Felipe Paulino seven, and also relieved. Nathan Adcock started two games. Danny Duffy started six through 27 innings. Six starts. No, wait, hang on. That's game's finished. Hang on, I lost my place. After Duffy, Jake Odorizzi started two. He would be used in a trade. Ryan Verdugo started one. So you don't have to have, if you're transactional, which they clearly were pretty transactional between that year and 14. because they had a lot of spots to fill. By the way, the bullpen closing, Jonathan Broxton, they traded him at the deadline, didn't they? He got moved in a deal. Yeah. Look at what, if anything, came back that ended up being used in the World Series. Nice. Kelvin Herrera, Tim Collins. Collins was on the team. Greg Holland would be on the team. And Aaron Crow. And I don't know, I can't remember if Aaron Crow was on there. So, you know, and I mentioned Danny Duffy got some starts, was down in there. Odorizzi was used in a deal. I mean, you can, mathematically, if we use this as our guide, they can be 2 years away. If, and I will say it's a big if, they win 72 games. I do think the wins and losses matter. Like, that was one of the things I heard a lot of people before the year. I don't even care what their record is. It's just all about their starting pitching coming forward. But if their starting pitching comes forward, they will win. So you should care about the record. It's impossible to win 54 games and have a really good pitching staff. Those two things don't go together.
Yeah, it's the point of, like, because I don't, the Royals are going to have to ask in themselves, like, how many games, like, how much do they care about losing 100 games this year? Because that's going to come down to a lot of decisions they have to make over the next month or so based on, are you trying to go for 2023 or do you want to avoid the embarrassment of losing 100 games? So I do think there's a little bit of something to the, it doesn't matter how many games they lose at this point once you're 20 games under, because that is going to dictate your decision that's going to make you best set up for the exact turnaround that you just mentioned in 2 years.
You have to, and I coined this phrase a long time ago, embrace the suck. Embrace it. It frees you of a lot of obligations, but this organization has never done that.
It's the round number. It's 100 losses. It's a triple digit number. There's a source of embarrassment for losing 100 games as an MLB franchise. And I understand it. I just don't think it should be the overriding factor that guides your decisions.
No, and I agree, because the Houston Astros in 2013 were 51-1-11, and 2 years later they had the Royals on the ropes in the postseason.
And they had three straight 100 loss seasons, didn't they?
Yeah, 106, 107, 111. Then in 14 they went 70-92, and then they were 86-76, and had the Royals down.
They were six outs away from going to the division, the LCS.
And it's a different concept than, like, say, the NFL or the NBA, where you're just trying to get a high draft pick, which is certainly valuable. I mean, I remember Ned Yost used to say the top five picks are a separator in most drafts. You know, there's a drop off 1-5 compared to 6-10. There's a big gap, a bigger gap there than any other, you know, five
section,
segment
yeah.
gap. And so but that's not the reason I think the Royals should, you know, be scared to lose 100 games. It's specifically about the guys on your roster and what do you do with them. And heck, we're actually having the exercise for what guys are going to be contributing, you know, once they make the playoffs. That's the exercise that should drive the gist of their transactions. You know, is Brad Keller going to be here for a playoff team?
So to take it all the way around and for me to answer the question I asked you, I think Brad Keller on a championship team, I think Coar's in the bullpen, Keller's in the bullpen. I think I'm with you. I kind of am intrigued by Heasley. I think he could be maybe the Guthrie.
Yeah, he can be like a five starter. I think that gives you 4 to 5 innings. I mean, especially in this new wave of baseball, we don't have to throw 7 innings.
I think Lynch is in the rotation, and I actually think Singer would be in the rotation. I'm not convinced that he will, but in that scenario, a little bit of Curtis is thinking, if they're there and it's these guys, Lynch and Singer, and maybe Heasley, maybe those three. But I don't see it with Keller.
The only one that you said that surprises me is Keller, because
I have.
You're kind of saying that the Royals are going to be there next year.
And I like Brad Keller, the guy. And that's another thing is I think they're kind of missing Moose. Where's the a-hole? Right now, I never minded Moose. I never got sideways with him, but he could step on some people mm-hmm. that would go in there. And so I know that there was probably some of that amongst his teammates as well. And I'm not saying I want to see a clubhouse full of them, or that's what it takes to win is a bunch of jerks. And I'm not saying Moose was a jerk. I don't think he was. He had reasons for when he'd be pissy. The one day he was barging through the ball well.
Yeah,
he was just pouting and being a baby. But
he wasn't. He hadn't achieved anything into that point.
Yeah.
When that happened, he hadn't gotten there yet.
Yeah. But he had the red ass, and that drove him. He was not going to accept failure, and he wasn't going to accept a team sucking. And when they lost, it pissed him off. And like, the guys on this staff are you know, that I've talked to, and it's been a couple years that I've been able to get them in spring training and get that long conversation one-on-one. But Keller's a super nice guy, but I am getting to the point of the Ryans dragging their sorry ass. You said before the year, like Ryan McBroom or
McBroom and O'Hearn.
Like, I don't need to see them drag their sorry ass bats to the plate anymore. I'm getting to that point with Keller on the mound. He was really good as a reliever when they first got him. He has never been able to be consistent over even 81 games, let alone 162.
And the minute you see a little bit of a bright spot, you're like, maybe he's runs over three. Damn.
No, it doesn't. And he's been a Fangraphs darling at times. Enough.
It would have happened by now.
Enough.
So that would leave you with a couple options. Either you put him in the bullpen, or
which I think it was what I would do. That's what I would do. And I'd get him in the bullpen so I had a chance to sign him bullpen number-wise. Get him in the bullpen and not closing, and have a chance to say, listen, we're going to give you 2 years and add on and have him be a part of the equation. Because you can't trade him for anything. And if you're going to trade him, you need to get him in the bullpen like now, because next year he goes into where he's just a rental player.
I don't think
we're going to go through 6 years of what appear to be a great Rule 5 draft pick, and they're going to get virtually nothing tangible from it.
I don't think we can ever say they won't get anything for anybody when they got two players for Carlos Santana just this week.
Let me see those guys do something.
But they got something for him.
They did.
By the way, that was better than what they got for Jonathan Broxton at the trade deadline. They got Donnie Joseph, a pitcher who pitched all of six games for the Royals, and Juan Carlos Zulbaran, who never made it out of the minor leagues.
I do think there's a comparison though with the NFL draft as far as some of these
strategy
deadline,
wise.
These trade deadline deals are about getting more lottery tickets.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the Royals got a couple lottery tickets, and we all thought that when they traded Trevor Rosenthal, they got a couple lottery tickets too. And it happened to be that the day that they traded Carlos Santana, one of the pieces for the Rosenthal deal, not ranked as one of the Padres' top 30 prospects that year, he was the year earlier in the high 20s, was hitting cleanup, which says something both about the return and the current state of the Royals lineup. And then
talk about Edward Olivares.
Yeah, and then I mean, then you've got a seventh inning guy, you know, as well out of that deal. Also, not one of the Padres' top 30 prospects at the time. The Royals, you know, I do think they have a pretty good strategy.
Not still COVID also, but they repaid the Padres by in the deal, or maybe this was payback for the deal when they went for Trevor Cahill and they gave away what is the best prospect right now in the Padres system.
There's some
Estuary Ruiz.
There's something to like, the Royals have this strategy that it seems like they target the teams that have good systems, not just, like, a player they like within a system. But, you know, the Padres have had a really good farm system when they made that deal, and the Mariners are the same way. They're ranked as the second-best farm system. So I think, you know, when teams say, hey, we're looking for this, I mean, the first thing, of course, you're going to do is look at the players that they have. But I think that the Royals have been looking at just the whole package of a farm system and try and pluck guys from that system.
We'll talk a little bit more about what maneuvers might happen at the trade deadline next with Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star. He's brought to you by our friends at Corona. Grab you a Corona Premier. Less carbs, less calories. You can get it wherever you find your Coronas. Corona Premier. Get one tonight.
I mean, really?
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 What do you think we do here?
It's time for Really with Seth and Amy.
Yeah, that's a really. There's a really there. We're talking to Sam McDowell, brought to you by our friends at Corona. Corona Light, Corona Premier, and the Corona Hard Seltzers. Get them wherever you buy your Coronas. Four great flavors for the Corona Hard Seltzers. All right, so what happens? They made the move for Carlos Santana, which they, I think, had confetti emoji flying right after it as they sent it out. But like when I see those things, like you mentioned buying lottery tickets, have they hit on any of the lottery tickets? Olivares could, right? Because Randy talks about that on our Kauffman Corner podcast. He loves that trade, and for good reason. Dylan Coleman throws 100 and Olivares, but neither one of them's really done anything yet. They look like they could be pretty good pieces. That's got the best potential. But is there one that we remember that they've, because I don't think they buy enough lottery tickets. I'm fine with there being nothing in return for Jonathan Broxton.
Obviously what they got for Greinke.
But that wasn't a deadline deal. Let's swing for the fences. They tend to take those things and get a 28-year-old guy in double A, right? It's never the 18-year-old kid that was signed at 15 that's in, you know, still playing in Latin America or is in low A. They don't take enough swings at that. Like, you know, you point to the two big trades. The Nori Aoki deal was actually, I got no problem with that one. You know,
starting right fielder for a pennant winner.
Although Will Smith has been better, obviously, because he's still pitching. But you know, it completed their lineup, and he would get on base more than people realize. Yeah, 350 on base. Yep. But you know, they you know, the Greinke deal and the Will Myers. You can't get nothing for those. Those are massive pieces. And so I think you either got to be like, you know, we're not really good at throwing these darts. We need to make a massive piece deal.
They routinely get guys who are about 2 years older than you would like them to be for whatever level they're at in the minor leagues.
So this to me all comes down to timing of when you trade guys, and it's actually something I'm writing next week. But the Royals need to make
Strain yourself. You give yourself a whole week to get it done.
The Royals need to make decisions now about the guys that have more than a year left. You know, to me, Scott Barlow is a really interesting name because I think
you know what?
Literally every contending team needs another arm in the bullpen.
Yeah,
and that's what you've got a couple guys in your bullpen that would be really valuable to contending teams. They could throw seventh.
You
eighth
have to root for,
the,
for him
teams.
To be the Royals All-Star rep.
Yeah,
drive up his trade value.
I don't understand how they can move Wade Davis at a time that they're still kind of trying to contend, and yet they still don't move any relievers now. Like that disconnect boggles my mind. Hey Sam, thanks for fitting us in this week.
Appreciate it.
That was huge, man.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.